Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I'll be muffled, I guess, all week. It'll be okay. I'm trying to figure out how to keep my glasses from fogging up. We usually do a segment on Sunday evening that runs Monday and sometimes Tuesday in regard to a Pro Bowl wrap-up from Radio Row. I would say that my mask is presented by the Maryland Lottery. I have all sorts of fun things around here. I got Chaucer koozies. I've got Liberty Pure shirts. All of our sponsors have been so great in sending us out here. We're going to have some wise conversations as well. None better than this. These guys are usually next to me. Chris, 20 years maybe you and I have done this together.
18.
Before last year, 18. All right. I knew we were getting up there. Luke, are we up on 10, 12, somewhere like that with you at this point?
My first one was the 2011 season. So, yeah, thereabouts.
Well, it's a little more empty here without you guys. And, you know, I wore this shirt because I knew Pica would love it. And even more so, you know, what I really did here is I'm wearing my Led Zeppelin belt buckle. And that's the going to California because I'm in California. I'm in Los Angeles, California. My glasses are fogged up. I'm in an empty room. It is Radio Row. Chris, you know, since your mic's going to sound better than mine through the mask, tell everyone about this event and the perspective on running the event. Like today, I pulled into town, and if this is pretty indicative, and you guys would see this, the media passes are a good three city blocks away from where I'm sitting. So I dropped my stuff off. I walked three city blocks through the middle of the NFL experience in Los Angeles at the Los Angeles Convention Center, where the Los Angeles Rams are hosting the game and in the game. I saw thousands of fans, literally a couple, 3,000-4,000 fans in and around, everyone wearing a Rams jersey. I saw some Niners. It took me all the way there and back to find one person wearing a Chargers jersey. So I just want to set the scene for Los Angeles here and say that the Rams are in the Super Bowl. We're in LA. And Chris, this is kind of weird, right? Like since the Rose Bowl, it's a really kind of historic Super Bowl.
It is, and you know, you have a back-to-back year with a home team in the game. You're back in Los Angeles where the game had been, you know, at the Rose Bowl and at the Coliseum in previous times. You're downtown LA. There are a lot of things have changed, and the biggest thing that changed is that they have two National Football League teams in that city now. And as you found out today through your walk through downtown, that there are a lot of Rams fans and maybe not that many Chargers fans, but the first weekend of NFL experience is mostly locals anyway who want to go down and don't really want to be in the crazy of the end of Super Bowl week. So it's a great first weekend for all the local families and the folks to come out to see the NFL experience, to go through NFL shop and everything that they put together. And it's a nice event for families who can't afford the 5G to get in the game next Sunday. They get a little piece of the Super Bowl in their home city.
Luke, I would say to you that because we can bet on everything now, and I'm going to involve hardcore gambling next season, bet on the Chargers being somewhere else. You know, just being here, that's the first thing I said. I said, there's another team here, and they barely like the team they got that's in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only argument you could make is LA is very transient, and I mean, people love the Lakers when they win. They love the Dodgers when they win. There's tradition for those two teams, but I think everyone else, it's more hit or miss. So if Justin Herbert becomes the next Tom Brady over the next decade, maybe that changes it. But yeah, other than that scenario where the Chargers become so good that they can't be ignored in LA, you know, having never been to LA and just, you know, watching that situation from afar, it's definitely a case where, you know, even the Rams, they were there a long time ago. So there's some semblance of tradition, even if that's still pretty weak relative to what you'd expect. But hey, they're the first one to get to a Super Bowl of those two teams since moving to LA. And if they win, they'll be the toast of the town for the time being. But again, other than the Dodgers and the Lakers, and even those teams when they've had, you know, some leaner periods, you see the interest level not be as much, but it's been pretty evident from the moment they arrived, and certainly with the new stadium, you know, even though the 49ers fans famously took over against the Rams at the end of the regular season, but it's if there's one or the other, it's clearly a Rams town now, and the Chargers will have to do a heck of a lot of winning and winning at a really high level to change that. I think you're absolutely right on that.
And I think another thing to keep in mind, too, is remember you've had the two moves that have happened, or three moves, if you will, including the Rams. The Raiders are far enough away from Oakland that they have a fan base in that area of Vegas and areas adjacent that they can build into. You have a lot of people from San Diego who are just absolutely hate the Chargers for moving at this point. And so they're not making their way up I-5 to go to NFL experience to be anything around it or be Chargers fans because of the fact they were abandoned down in San Diego. So I think it's a harder road for them to that sort of getting into that real mix of LA. I mean, they had some success this year and had a chance, but the Rams, I think, had some advantages going into that stadium and coming back to Los Angeles that the Chargers are going to need time to work through. And then to your point, Luke, having a quarterback that could turn into Tom Brady would certainly help their chance.
Chris, I would say to you, for the league, and I was at the league meeting when they decided to basically screw St. Louis. And then after that, they were going to put two teams in Carson and build a project there. And the Chargers and the Raiders are going to be part of that. Then they weren't. I swear, I got dropped off here. I'm up on the second floor. It's a gigantic convention center. I mean, it's Los Angeles. It's downtown. I can see the Hollywood sign out my hotel room, the whole deal. And it's a little freaky deaky. I was here a couple years ago for that Rams game where they're having a NASCAR race as we speak. Almost better than the Pro Bowl, honestly, at the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum that has some new name now. The Staple Place is now the Crypto Place. I mean, so things change here in La La Land in Hollywood. But in walking through here, the first time I saw the Aaron Donald shirt on the guy, and I saw an old golf jersey that's now a Stafford jersey, and I see all these kids of all different denominations, ages, races, persuasions, fans, people that love the game. And I think about how long and how many years you went to league meetings and we went to Super Bowls and they threatened San Diego and they said, no stadium, you won't get a Super Bowl there. And how all this worked out, as I walk through here to think of what an unbelievable wet dream it has been for the league and Goodell and Kroenke. And I guess Jerry Jones, that they pointed to this Super Bowl. They pointed to this stadium. They pointed to this city. They pointed to this market. They threatened with this market to get Houston done and to get other places done. And I'm walking through here and I'm like, you know what? They got a franchise. They got a stadium. They got a Super Bowl. The team's in the Super Bowl. There's tons of people down here a week before the game. You don't have to worry about fans coming in. I said to my wife, I'm like, there's no visiting fans. There's some Cincinnati fans, and there's barely Rams fans, but there's nobody flying in to be a Rams fan. There's a whole, half of the fan base that's been, removed from the hotel rooms and all of that.
Yeah, and I think the other thing with the Rams, too, I think to that point was you have a generation of folks that are, closer to my age, Nestor, that remember the Rams in L.A. the first time around. The grandfathers and the dads, they remember, when the Rams were here. So there was some fandom, even though they went to St. Louis and then come back. But the league's gotten what they wanted. They, this was a major issue for the league that they did not have a team in the, basically the second largest city in the country, second largest TV market, if you will. No team here. So they had to use that as leverage against other cities, and they did. And now they've got this beautiful stadium at SoFi. They've got headquarters for the NFL Network and basically NFL West out there. So they've got a foothold in the entertainment district. And so all the planning of the NFL owners and Jerry Jones having a large piece of the concessionaire stuff through the companies he owns and with his dealings with Kroenke, the league has managed to put a beautiful stadium there and have not only but one but two teams. So the league, as we always have come to find out over our years in working with it, the league usually wins. And it maybe takes a little bit longer, but they usually win, and they won here.
Is this the point where I say they couldn't have scripted it? And then, Luke, I give it to you and say, let's talk about Brian Flores. By the way, I was flying, and I got to say this because – this is me doing a punchline, doing shtick, right? But I'm walking through the airport and it put up on the ESPN head on the screen, the revolving 8 chairs for the NFL coaches, and the empty seats were white shadows. And I thought, that's interesting. Somebody in Bristol did that on purpose. They made it a white shadow instead of a black shadow box of the places in Miami, wherever they haven't hired a coach yet. Luke, what a week for scandal, right? As we sit here, and I know you remember 2 years ago, right around this time, we lost Kobe Bryant, and it was a crazy media story. But from the Baltimore perspective, the president of the Ravens stepping down at 6 p.m. on a Friday night. Interesting little lead-in, as for many years you and I had to step into the media room here to watch Steve Bisciotti do his press conference on video because he had done it this week. Lots and lots of change going on in Owings Mills right now, right?
Yeah, there is.
Repeat that for me because you broke up a little bit at the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, with Dick Cass stepping down, I don't think it's something that's completely a shock. I mean, he's 76 years old. He's been with the team since 2003, 2004. And, you know, this is something that had been whispered about for a couple years now. I don't think it's anything that shocking, just looking at his age. But it is a major transition. You know, the timing of the announcement was interesting. But, you know, I don't think it was a bad, you know, it wasn't a bad news thing or anything like that. So I would tend to think maybe that was more so Dick Cass not wanting a whole lot of attention over it because that's how unassuming he's been, at least in my interactions with him over the years. But it's definitely going to be a major transition for the organization. Sashi Brown coming in, which I know a lot of football fans react to that in a negative sense because of his tenure with the Browns. But keep in mind, this is much more on the business side and non-football. You know, he's not going to be signing players, making personnel decisions in that way. In fact, the Ravens actually sent out a revised statement that made it clear that he wasn't going to be involved with football, specific football decisions. But, you know, I mean, Dick Cass, that's very big shoes to fill. And I think anyone who followed that Friday night into Saturday, knowing people within the organization, whether you're talking to players, coaches, employees, many of them had kind words, kind anecdotes, kind stories as far as what he's meant to this organization. When you think about the transition going from Art Modell to Steve Bisciotti and you know, how pivotal that time period was. When keep in mind, we're talking at that point, the Ravens were less than 10 years old when that definitely a big story, not one that's going to garner a lot of national attention. As you mentioned, I mean, the Brian Flores story, you know, we thought talking about deflated footballs was out of control a few years ago. This is a much more serious issue, a much more, casts a wide net as far as the entire league and you know, Roger Goodell, the league office, and most specifically the 32 owners. But you know, as it relates to the Ravens, yeah, there's a lot going on between head coach, defensive coordinator introduced, general manager talking on Friday, and then Friday evening finding out your longtime team president is going to be retiring here in the near future. So lots going on in Owings Mills, but again, you know, the focus is very clearly going to be on the Brian Flores suit and you know, what that's going to mean, what it potentially hopefully brings in terms of change for the better in the long run.
I am on Radio Row. Chris Pica is here. He is Blog and Tackle. Luke Jones, our partner. We do this every year. Usually we do it in person. Usually I don't do it through a mask. I am in Los Angeles. I'll be here all week for full Radio Row coverage. Chris, you worked for the Saints for a number of years. You worked for the Falcons. Your whole background is in sports management, sports leadership, ownership, presidents. Not all presidents are beloved and hang out for 20 years, right? So let's start with that. And not all presidents give kidneys to others. And, you know, I'm fond of Dick in many ways. But things are going to change, right? I mean, Chris, this is the end of an era in a lot of ways. And it starts to beg the question of when the end of the Steve Bisciotti era will begin. I will be talking about that. We should all be talking about that, wondering who's next in line, because that's the next thing that's going to happen. That will change the complexion of the organization and really the trajectory of what they're going to try to do in the next generation. Because as I pointed out, Chris, the Modells don't live here anymore, right?
Well, it's true. And I think to Luke's point and to your point, one of the things that I don't think people, I think smart folks realize this, is that Steve Bisciotti is not in the building every single day. Dick Cass is in the building every single day. He is not the owner of the Ravens, but he is certainly the most public face of the Ravens to the employees inside the building and to those outside the building. So, you know, when you have someone in that position, because most NFL owners, the two that I worked for, and Tom Benson and Arthur Blank, were in the offices every day, were very visible. Steve Bisciotti has not really carried himself that way, especially more so in recent years. And so Dick Cass has sort of been that the face of the franchise in a lot of ways, and what's been behind the curtain in many other ways than what we don't see. And I'm sure that the league office, and Luke, I think you can, you know, you might smile at this. I'm sure the league office probably called the Ravens and said, considering everything we've gone through this week, could you all have just done a very nice announcement at your press conference at 12 o'clock on Friday to announce Sashi Brown as your club president? That would have been very nice of the league to be able to trumpet and point to, as opposed to a 6 o'clock press release after you've already had all of your press conferences. And it just was different. I guess that's the Ravens way. And Nestor, to your point, that's the Dick Cass way of doing it. But if I'm the league, boy, I would have really preferred this to be earlier in the day on Friday to sort of make the point, you know, some of the points that they're trying to make in dealing with the Brian Flores lawsuit and everything that's around that.
Luke, for you, with thoughts about the Flores situation and, I don't know, the reverberations of it, because we talk big picture. If you were here all week, it's going to be in every conversation, right? Like, it's going to lead every conversation here in the way that, you know, sadly Kobe Bryant did a couple years ago, or Deflategate, or any of those sort of scandalous things. Boy, it's almost that the league scripts these things.
Yeah, I mean, they don't. I mean, I don't think they do. But I think what we have here is, I mean, I think very clearly the overwhelming percentage of people recognize a problem here, right? But I think what's difficult is you have the micro, which is each and every situation where teams have different fits, they have different person, you know, all the different variables that work. And there's plenty of nuance that goes into each one of those decisions. So, you know, I think you recognize that, but then you look in the macro and you say, the coin keeps landing on heads. It just keeps landing on heads. It keeps landing on heads. And I think that's what's incredibly frustrating when you're looking at this. I know Tony Dungy last year famously penned a letter to the 32 owners, and he talked about this. And I mean, Tony Dungy he has my respect. You know, I respect him as much as anyone in football. And, you know, he talked about it in a very eloquent way. He talked about the fact that we have 70% roughly of players are black. Roughly 30%, I think he said, might have been a little over 30% of coaches, talking head coaches and assistants, are minority coaches. This doesn't add up. And that's where we look at this. And as much as we want this to change, and we talk about this, and we've talked about this before, this is not the first time this has been talked about by a long shot. You know, we talked about the Rooney Rule 20 going on 20 years ago.
Well, Marvin Lewis was, you know, I was very close with Marvin at the time. And, you know, I remember Marvin taking that sham interview, and I remember how angry it made him. And, but if you speak out, then you never coach the Bengals for 16 years, right?
But
I mean, that's the stakes 20 years ago. We're going back a generation now.
Sure. And I mean, obviously, this goes back much longer than that, getting into black quarterbacks and, you know, go back to the infancy of the league with player, you know, black players not being welcome for periods of time. But I think, again, how do we fix it? And I think that's what's difficult about this in terms of how do we actually fix this rather than just continuing to acknowledge there's a problem? Because, barring some people who aren't going to be constructive whatsoever to the conversation, we recognize a problem, right? So how do we do that? And understanding there is nuance in each and every individual hiring, that's where I kind of look at it from a standpoint of, and I saw some of, as much as the Pro Bowl was worthless to watch and I tapped out after about 25 minutes, I did watch some of the pregame. And I know, Randy Moss was talking about this, Booger McFarland, they had Lewis Riddick. And one thing that they brought up, and this is something that I think absolutely needs to happen, I think it's happened to some degree, I think we need much more of it, is having more and more forums for entry-level coaches, ascending assistants, and offensive and defensive coordinators to network and meet owners. And not a case where some owner is sending his proxy, right? That not one of those deals. It needs to be mandatory. And, this can be done at dead periods of the league year. And have these people get in the same room. And it can be beneficial for entry-level coaches to find out, what team executives are looking for from an interviewing standpoint. And certainly, and this is where I really think this would be beneficial to the problem we're talking about, it requires these owners to be in the same room and to rub elbows with so many of these coaches and to not just, fall back on who you're familiar with. We know, psychological studies have been done on, familiarity bias, and, you tend to gravitate towards people that think like you, talk like you, look like you, behave like you. And, so much of that, I don't think this is a case of talking about the 32 ownership groups in the league that they're all blatantly racist, that there's some, that there's some deliberate conspiracy that they're all saying, I'm not going to hire black coaches. But what we do have is like I said, when you look at it in the macro, we're not seeing enough diversity in these hires. So we need to create more forums to have more of that long before it gets to a point where we're talking about, okay, Rooney rule, we have to interview two minority candidates. If we're waiting to that, if that's the what we're counting on to spark change, that's not going to happen because clearly that's not working. So it needs to go at a much lower level. Certainly another issue would be, in a big picture sense, more diversity in our ownership groups. But again, that's not something you can just snap a finger and that's going to happen overnight. But I think more and more forums where these people are talking to each other, meeting each other, getting to spend time with one another to grow, like I said, the benefits of these entry-level coaches and ascending assistant coaches to kind of have some experience and tips and interviews and different things like that. But then more importantly, these ownership groups basically being forced to, need to branch out and meet more people around the league and see this. Do I think that's going to fix it and make it perfect overnight? No. But if we're talking about this in a long-term sense to spark the positive change that we want to see, that we're not talking about the fact that there's one out of 32 coaches in the NFL that are black, that we're not even talking about it because it just feels more, it feels right. We see more diversity. But for that to happen, we need all, we need more of this. And what I pose, I don't think, like I said, is going to solve it entirely, but I think it certainly can help. And I know the league has attempted to do things like that, but we need much, much, much more of that.
We're going to step out, take a break. Luke is here. Chris Pike is here. Chris's blog and tackle. Luke, of course, you can find at Baltimore Luke anywhere the internet is served. I am on Radio Row. It is all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I've got wise conversation. I got more swag. You guys are going to see me, and I have cups. I have hats. I have all sorts of Pizza Johns. I wish I had some Pizza Johns pizza here. I'm out in Los Angeles. We'll be here all week. I'm going to let Chris answer to that because Chris worked in the business, worked under a number of different coaches and ownership groups. I want to give him long form to answer that. I'm Nestor, back for more from Radio Row and Super Bowl 56. Yeah, we're in LA. Stay tuned. We're Baltimore Positive.